Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Politics in the time of pandemic is a tricky proposition. Bernie Sanders is reassessing his prospects for a Democratic nomination after getting trounced in three state Democratic primaries on Tuesday, none of which were Ohio's, of course. With public events banned, a victorious Joe Biden used a somber video in part to reach out to Sanders' followers.
So let me say, especially to the young voters who have been inspired by Senator Sanders, I hear you. I know what's at stake. I know what we have to do.
The thing is, no one really knows how any of this could play out. Political journalist Ken Rudin joins us every month to share his insights. You can hear more on Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome back, Ken Rudin.
Thank you, Ann, and thank you for saying that it's a tricky proposition talking politics, because in the scheme of things with this pandemic that is changing everybody's lives, to talk about politics, it almost seems like, don't you have other things to talk about? But there is an election that is going on, and that is not going to be canceled, so we have to talk about it, but it is a very tricky proposition.
I didn't plan on jumping right to this, but I've only seen one play on that score, as far as I know, and that was Senate Leader Mitch McConnell complaining about one of his possible general election opponent, and complaining about her ads and telling her that she shouldn't be campaigning in that way. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, of course, that is a perfect thing for an incumbent to say. It's one thing for a challenger who's going to be well underfinanced running against Mitch McConnell, and you expect somebody like McConnell to say, it's one thing to say we have to stand together as Americans and we have to put politics aside, but there's no way of putting politics aside. And if you look for all the leadership that President Trump has exhibited in the last few days from the White House, for weeks, he has derided the Democrats and the media and even the Fed for exaggerating this threat. It's a plot to defeat him. It's a Democratic plot to distract from the real issues. So for the Republicans to talk about Democrats playing politics with it is a little hollow. But having said that, I think the White House is finally coming around to realize this is far more serious than votes and Democrats and Republicans. But for the longest time, that was not the case.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is political journalist Ken Rudin. If you have a question or comment today, want to talk about politics, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. This was a critical year. Any presidential election year is a critical year. This was a critical, unlike many others in the past, and now all the more important and critical because of the COVID-19 spread. Ken Rudin, at this point, though, in the Democratic nomination process, how free should Joe Biden feel to take up the mantle of nominee at this point?
Well, I mean, putting that question, it's a good question, Ann, but I think putting it another way is I don't see a path for Bernie Sanders to win the nomination. Now, this is so remarkable to say that, because 3 weeks ago, Bernie Sanders was the ostensible nominee. He was on his way to the nomination, and people were saying, can Bernie Sanders be stopped? And basically, Joe Biden, having done so poorly in Iowa and New Hampshire and a second place finish in Nevada, he was on life support. And now, basically, Bernie Sanders, having been wiped out in South Carolina in Super Tuesday, in the week after Super Tuesday, and last Tuesday with thorough drubbings in Illinois, Florida, and Arizona, it's impossible to make the case for him. For one, everybody is talking about the pandemic, as we should be. They are postponing primaries. There is basically no coverage. There's no rallies, certainly, and there's no campaign to speak of. Neither Biden nor Sanders had been campaigning before crowds of people. So how do you get noticed? Now, you know, I mean, it's one thing to say that if this were a close race, like, for example, of Obama and Clinton, Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton in 2008, that would be one thing. But right now, Joe Biden has such a huge lead in the delegate count, in the popular vote count. it's hard to make the case that there's an argument for mm-hmm. continuing a candidacy. And I know there are a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters out there who feel very passionately about their candidate, as they should. Mm-hmm. But there's also reality that has to set in as well.
And then therein lies, you know, this is the fickleness of the times and the pandemic and so forth. I kind of go back to then that same question of that, how free should Joe Biden feel to take up that mantle until Bernie Sanders steps away?
Well, that's a good question. And I think that the little clip you played, Joe Biden on Tuesday night from Delaware, mm-hmm. of course, not in front of his supporters, it was very low-key, it was mm-hmm. very humble, and it was reaching out. It was an olive branch to Bernie Sanders and his supporters. But if I were Joe Biden, I think Bernie Sanders is not the name I would be mentioning anymore. It would be Donald Trump, and I would be saying that from mm-hmm. right now until the November election.
What about Sanders' quiet? He hasn't said a word since the primaries on Tuesday. What do you make of that?
It has to be just, you know, depressing and you know, for somebody who was considered the front runner, the likely nominee. He was obviously planning who his running mate would be. He was getting more contributions than anybody by far. His rallies were incredibly enthusiastic. But again, you know, for him to, like, he had this this news conference he had shortly after one of the primaries, where he said that we may be losing the voting battle, but we're winning the ideological battle because our supporters are, you know, we have a majority. But there's no indication of that. There's no mm-hmm. proof of that. There's no showing that anybody that if you're looking, if the Democrats are looking for somebody who they feel that could beat President Trump, and whether this is accurate or not, right now you'd have to say it's Joe Biden, because he's sweeping every demographic. He's sweeping Hispanics. He's sweeping the low middle class blue collar workers. Mm-hmm. There were so many. The only group that seems to be sticking with Bernie Sanders are the young voters. But again, you'd never know it by looking at what happened in Illinois, Florida, and Arizona on Tuesday.
Right. Do we know if the young voters are turning out?
No. And see, that's another point that should be worth mentioning, because one of Bernie Sanders' arguments from the beginning was that I can expand the electorate. I can bring in new voters.
Yeah.
But we've seen from the beginning, even going back to Iowa and New Hampshire, that was not the case. He was not bringing in new voters. He was not expanding the electorate. And if anything, as we saw starting in South Carolina, it's Joe Biden who's bringing in African-Americans in an enthusiastic number of Black voters that wasn't seen before, even far more than Hillary Clinton was getting in 2016. So all the arguments, and again, I don't want to pronounce anybody dead, and well, politically dead, and we have to be very careful about those terms today. Mm-hmm. I understand that. But having said that, you know, until Bernie Sanders says it's time to go, we should afford him the opportunity to do it on his terms. But one, reality sets in, and two, it's not like 2016. Bernie Sanders didn't endorse Hillary Clinton until July,
right?
Shortly before the convention, well after the primaries were over,
and it was so fraught by then.
Oh yeah, yeah. But even so, it was far closer than it is now. I mean, mm-hmm. right now, Bernie Sanders would have to get 65% or so of every remaining primary to have a chance. And who knows when these primaries are going to take place, because more and more states, right, like Ohio, have postponed them.
Yeah. And so we've, you know, Ohio is postponed till June 2nd. You know, Mississippi, Georgia, and probably more going forward will postpone.
Oh, Maryland, Kentucky. Right. Absolutely. Right.
I mean, this is huge. And I'm wondering about, I mean, I don't think it's an existential threat to our system of elections, but how does it work if we don't show up, if we can't show up at the polls?
Well, that is a very, very important question. And it leads to not only conspiracy theories. I mean, not that I'm looking online for sanity, but on many social media posts that, well, if Mike DeWine can say no primary, why couldn't Donald Trump say no election?
I mean,
you know, those things are out there. But the important thing is that this may be the mail balloting may be the answer. Now, I've always been the kind of person who never votes. First of all, I don't vote in primaries, but whenever I do vote in November, I vote in person because I like that experience.
Yeah,
but
me too.
That experience, but nothing makes sense anymore, and that doesn't work anymore. And so, as we saw in Illinois, for example, I mean, not only did many poll workers not show up because they were sick, so they were there for long lines in Illinois, which defeats the whole purpose of not being among 10 people or more or groups of 50 or more. Mm-hmm. There were unsanitary voting machines in Illinois because they were not properly cleaned. There were no experienced poll workers to explain how to vote. So when you have that, you know, people are not going to show up. So therefore, there are more and more states, more and more secretaries of state who are calling for changing the vote system to be vote by mail. But again, that's not simple. It's not just like a snap of a fingers or a wave of a pen. Often it has to be by legislative action, and not every legislature is ready to do that.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of people understand why in Ohio, it seems they understand why the primary was postponed, but a lot of people are ticked about how it was postponed so abruptly.
It was the day before the primary.
Hours before.
Exactly. And how do you do that? And while we're mentioning it, among those states, Ohio is among those states that while they have postponed its primary, they are not saying anything about mail ballots. They're just postponing it to June, assuming, and hopefully they're right, but assuming that the pandemic will have lessened by June. But what if it's not? Then what happens?
Right. We just don't know. As far as the whole dynamic that we've grown accustomed to in the United States of campaigning, that is pretty much off the table. I mean, I don't even know if they can pull together conventions this year.
Well, I mean, that's a fair question.
I mean they could. The delegates could vote no matter what. That's not an issue, but...
That's true. But of course, I mean, first of all, you could make the case that conventions are just a show, for years. I mean, nothing really happens. I think when I think back to the 2000 convention, with Al Gore, I mean, the only drama was how long Al and Tipper Gore would kiss. I think that went on for 27 seconds. But there's really no story. You know, once upon a time, I always think of 1952. I don't know why I think of it because it's, you know, before my time. But 1952, Adlai Stevenson walks into the convention in Chicago as a non-candidate and comes out as a nominee. I mean, exciting things happen then. In 1980, Ted Kennedy and Jimmy Carter fought until the convention. But now the nominees are decided well before the convention because of the primaries. Even the vice presidency, which used to be at the convention. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember Ronald Reagan going. My first convention was 1980 in Detroit. Ronald Reagan showing up a day early, shocking the delegates and announcing that his vice president and running mate would be George Bush. And the place went crazy. I mean, it was so exciting. Now even VPs are decided early. And as we heard Joe Biden say from the last Sunday's debate, with no studio audience, by the way, he said that he pledged to name a woman as his running mate. So the convention's really, I mean, yeah, absolutely, it could be a pro forma thing. There's no reason for thousands of delegates to show up. But of course, Milwaukee and Charlotte would suffer tremendous financial consequences.
Exactly. So much more to talk about with Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you want to check out the podcast, we have a link posted on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment for Ken Rudin, we're talking politics, but it's in the time of pandemic. It's different. It's a whole different conversation we're having today. I hope you'll join us. 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from Tech Elevator, Columbus's coding bootcamp. Instructors average 20 years experience, and 94% of graduates are employed in technology roles. Online aptitude assessments and applications to become a software developer are available at techelevator.com.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. President Trump has signed a coronavirus relief bill that provides free testing and temporary paid leave to some idled workers. Department of Treasury unveiled details of a $1 trillion stimulus package, half of which would cover cash payments to individuals. About $300 billion would go to help small businesses. Still, many still focus on how Trump managed the early days of the outbreak and how he has persisted in calling it a Chinese virus. Still with us is political journalist Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Ken, let's talk about President Trump right now, because he can't get out and campaign either. He is kind of hogging the limelight at these press conferences every day. I mean, it's interesting, and for some people, it's funny, but it's also serious. What do you make of this Chinese virus reference he insists on using?
Well, he, you know, anybody who's listened to Donald Trump since he announced his candidacy in 2015 he's always had this obsession with China. China, China, China. He said this over and over again. If you go on YouTube and search Trump and China, there's an amazing meme of him saying it for like 5 minutes, just China for 5 minutes. It's, you know, they doctored it all together. He's obsessed with China, and understandably, because it's helped him with his campaign. He feels that they take advantage of us during trade deals, things like that. But having said that, There are people say that to call it a Chinese virus is racist or xenophobic or whatever it is, and he's denied it. The president said, look, it came from China, so therefore it's a Chinese virus. But, I mean, I don't think that's something I want to focus on. But it is interesting to me, and look, I don't want to pick on the president. We, this country, at this time, needs a leader. We need a leader more than ever. I mean, we always talk about Ronald Reagan during the Challenger explosion and George W. Bush during 9/11 and Bill Clinton during Oklahoma City. We mm-hmm. turn to those leaders for guidance and leadership and a steady hand. And there's no shortage of comments going back to January, but as recently as this month, when the president would either make fun of the virus or at least make fun of the Democrats' obsession with it, as he saw an obsession that they were out to get him, they were out to destroy him. It was a media plot. It was a Democratic plot. He still talks about, you know, while he'll have announcements say that we should put politics aside, he'll still criticize, like, the governor of Michigan and the failed New York Times and failed Chuck Schumer. So he'll attack them all politically while being a presidential leader with those press conferences. But having said that, when I see who I think should be the next president, Anthony Fauci, but when I see Anthony Fauci and the other health officials behind the president and the president taking it seriously, albeit belatedly, I do feel a little better for this country, because even the president can realize that things are serious. It's not just about the Dow. It's about life and death. It's about the completely changing our way of life. And I think the president, at least when he sounds presidential, is exactly what we need to hear.
Okay, so here's a presidential move. Steve Mnuchin, U.S. Treasury Secretary, was talking about what Americans need right now. Let's listen.
You can think of this as something like business interruption payments for the American workers. We're looking at sending checks to Americans immediately. Americans need cash now, and the president wants to get cash now. And I mean now, in the next 2 weeks.
When we hear him talk, this is the kind of things people need to hear. I mean, we're heading into a meltdown right now.
Well, I didn't realize that Andrew Yang was elected president. I mean, if you remember, Andrew Yang was talking about giving $1,000.
The irony of it all.
Exactly.
Of it all.
And it's socialism, for goodness sakes. They're giving.
But Yang was talking about $1,000 a month. So, you know.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Which I still haven't received yet. But having said that, look, I remember during the bailouts of 2008 the banking business and all the bailouts, so many Republicans were against that philosophically. And sometimes, you know, you have to change. You have to be flexible. And so I think, look, this disruption of life, the disruption of American life, the people who are thrown out of jobs with no protection,
right,
the people who work in restaurants and rely on tips and whose restaurants are closed. You know, there are so many disruptions to whether you could feed your family at all, whether you could pay your mortgage or your rent. So, you know, when this may not be conservative philosophy, but it's the way to be. It's the way people need their government to respond. And while it's not something I'd ever think I'd hear from Steven Mnuchin or the president,
yeah,
it's certainly an interesting eye opener.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Keith, in Westerville, you wanted to talk about Governor DeWine's decision to postpone the primary in Ohio. Welcome.
Well, thank you for putting me on. No, I want to talk about yours and Ken's comment. I want to commend the governor. I realize that it was a late call to postpone the primary election. Well, there's actually two things that happened in the primary. One has to do with the nomination of people to run from various parties. The other has to do with issues such as school issues that would have been on the ballot. But my comment is that I don't like the Monday morning quarterbacking. I happen to be a non-DeWine voter at the time, although I probably will vote for him if he runs again, given how he's handled this issue. But to criticize because they didn't make the call until the last minute, I just find to be inappropriate. It's easy for those of us who are on the sidelines to comment, but in this case, I just want to stand up and tell you I think it's wrong.
Okay. Ken Rudin?
Yeah, Keith makes an interesting point. And in my criticism, look, things happen. And I understand that you obviously want to see to make sure that it can go on as long as possible. And when it was untenable, they canceled it. My question is, I don't know if the governor, and according to state law, and I'm not an expert on Ohio state law, whether he has the jurisdiction to do so. I don't know if it's
that's
a
the
legislative
question right
thing.
Now. Yeah,
and that's the thing. That's the only thing. I think personally. I mean, here's a story. In Florida, everybody's saying the senior citizens are most affected by this. Stay home. Do not go out. At the same time, Florida held its primary on Tuesday, and it's telling people go out and vote. Now, to me, that is more irresponsible than canceling at the last second. So, Keith, my issue is not so much the cancellation at the last second. I think canceling it is the right thing to do. I'm just not sure if the process worked, if the governor assumed powers that he didn't have. And that sounds trivial, but again, as you see on social media, could the president of the United States say, well, this is really bad, I'm postponing the election? It's not that simple. It's not as simple as it sounds like I'm making it, but the fact is that I don't know if the governor had that power to do so. That's my real criticism.
And it makes me, I agree with everything that Ken said. And I'm sorry, Keith, that you saw that as a personal criticism of Governor DeWine. It certainly wasn't intended that way. It's more the process that I'm concerned about, how the process works going forward. And does this threaten the process, these kinds of decision-making things in this crisis? How do we hold up process-wise, when it comes to something as important in our society as a democratic election,
democracy. But having said that, do I think the decision to postpone the primary was the right call? Absolutely.
Yeah, of course. I agree. And that's someone for two people who love to vote in person, and I would have, but I'm glad I didn't have to make that decision. So, Keith, but your point's well taken. I mean, it's touchy times. I mean, I led the whole conversation today led with the idea that pandemics, this pandemic makes politics very tricky It's different right now, and we're cognizant of that. If you have a question or comment about it, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Candy in Granville, you're on the air. Hi, Candy.
Hi. I was just wondering if there are any polls right now showing that Biden is taking any Republicans that would like to get away from Trump already, or if there's any polling done right now for that. I know Republicans and Democrats were worried about Bernie, calling him a socialist, not being able to beat Trump. So I was wondering if there's anything showing how Biden is doing.
Okay.
I think a lot of this, that's a good question, Candy, and I think a lot of my information is more anecdotal than anything else. I mean, Bernie Sanders always said that he would appeal to disaffected Republicans because of his non-politics-as-usual approach, and maybe there's something to be said with that. My personal feeling was I thought that Trump would have loved to have run against Bernie Sanders. I just think there are so many past statements, positions he's taken, things that could not have been passed by a Republican Senate, even a Democratic Senate, who knows. But I think Joe Biden has a better opportunity, a chance of appealing to disaffected Republicans. But as we've seen in the primaries, I don't know if there are that many disaffected Republicans, to be honest. I mean, as the something that happened yesterday that nobody reported, but I understand why. But Bill Weld, the final challenger to Donald Trump on the Republican side, ended his campaign. He got one delegate, a total of one delegate. So if there are disaffected Republicans, they're not showing their face in the primaries, or at least we haven't seen it so far. I mean, one delegate is even only half of what Tulsi Gabbard has gotten. She has two delegates from American Samoa, and you know, as American Samoa goes, so goes I don't know, Mauritania. I don't know. But anyway, I don't know how many disaffected Republicans there are. There are certainly never Republicans who have been around for a while, but I still see Trump's numbers very strong among Republican voters. And if he is showing leader, I haven't seen polls about his approval ratings lately, but if he is exhibiting this kind of leadership, even though I think what he's done up to now is just abhorrent, but when it comes to dismissing the fears about the coronavirus, but if he's showing leadership, if he's on the TV every day showing how much he cares and how much he's focusing on those out of work and things like that, I assume that, you know, Republicans will stick with the president from now through the election.
Mickey in Columbus, you're on the air with Ken Rudin. Hi, Mickey.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that I was absolutely furious that I couldn't vote on Tuesday. And I don't know if they're really going to mail the ballot out or where I can go get one. But if we're not supposed to be out, then make sure everybody gets a ballot in the mail. That's the only fair thing. I do find it ironic that the judge voted one way. And I don't know. I hate to think conspiracy, but, you know, is it because he's a Republican? He didn't want us to vote? I don't know.
The judge originally said, the first judge, the common pleas judge, said that the vote should go on, that the governor didn't have the authority. But, and Mickey, just go online to the Secretary of State or your local Board of Elections, wherever you're at, Franklin County, and there should be instructions about how to order up your absentee ballot. Take care of that right away, because it could take a couple weeks and you want to make sure you get it in. But, good luck with that. So, I mean, there's differing opinions on this issue, right, Ken? It's
I don't want to sound like I'm a spokesman for the Democratic National Committee, because I am not a Democrat, but there's a clear fact that we have seen Republican state legislatures, mostly in the South, mostly involving poor and Black and minority populations, where there have been more and more voting restrictions put in. It's made it difficult, more and more difficult to vote. The fact is that Democrats seem to vote for enlarging and increasing the electorate. Republicans seem to wanting to curtail it. Not for a second do I think that that Mike DeWine is doing that at all. This is, I believe, there's no doubt in my mind that this is all about the health and security and safety of people coming to vote. So I think that's out there. But again, another thing I didn't like about the Ohio process is that there was a public dispute between the first judge who said this should go on and Mike DeWine saying, no, it shouldn't go on. And again, that's the kind of thing that you'd want to take care of in a phone call and not to make it public, which leads to more and more confusion. So a lot of people, and also the states that did have voting on Tuesday, for example, in Florida, a lot of these precincts were supposed to be in schools and in senior citizen homes, senior centers. Well, nobody wants to have senior people coming into senior centers to vote. Nobody wants people to come into schools to vote. So there's just so much things that they didn't get their act together around the country, across the country, for those states that did vote it. And it's just very unfortunate because there's so much uncertainty out there now.
And it does make you wonder if we reassess the voting process, you know, writ large now.
Well, that's so true. I mean, I think a majority of the states calls for allowing absentee ballots, but there are at least 14 or 15 states, maybe more, 16 states that say you could only vote absentee with an excuse, like with a doctor's note. And those things have got to be changed because I just think it shouldn't be an inconvenience to vote. I mean, my mom, who is 89 years old and lives in Florida, was not about to leave her house and vote on Tuesday. I mean, she always votes, but she was not going to vote. And you know, so I think it should be much easier. The process should be made much easier than more difficult.
We are going to take a break. My guest is Ken Rudin, veteran political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We're talking politics in the age of a pandemic, our first. And we're interested in what you think about what's going on. Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking national politics in the shadow of the coronavirus pandemic. Still with us, political journalist Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you want to check that out, we'll have a link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. High unemployment is forecast for the foreseeable future. Obviously, it's caused by the pandemic. No one's blaming anybody about it, but how much did anybody really get blamed for the Great Depression? What is the history of unemployment, Ken Rudin, in presidential election years?
Well, that's a great question, too. I mean, of course, Franklin Roosevelt was president as the Depression was getting worse and worse. And yet in 1936, when he was reelected, he won every state but Maine and Vermont. You know, that old expression, as Maine goes, so goes Vermont. I mean, that was the joke made at the time. They didn't blame the president because, of course, when he was elected in 1932, the Depression was already going on under Herbert Hoover. But I think of like Ronald Reagan in 1982. The economy was really bad. The unemployment rate was high. The numbers were not looking good. And the Democrats did really, really well in the off-year elections in 82. But then 2 years later, the economy was recovering and Reagan won 49 out of 50 states. So I don't think anybody is blaming the president. Again, all my comments about Trump in this hour with you, Ann, is mostly that I wish he had taken it seriously. I wish he wasn't so dismissive. I mean, I saw Devin Nunes the other day on Fox News saying, look, you know, this is a great time to go out to restaurants because there are no crowds. And But so they're finally getting the message a little late. I don't know if it would have how much of an effect an early earlier solution would have been made, if it would have saved, if it would have made a difference regarding health. But I don't know if anybody's blaming the president, will blame the president. But having said that, the biggest argument for Donald Trump's election, and his even his defenders would say, look, he may be a little unpolitical at all, say the wrong things at times, but the economy is doing really, really well, and he deserves re-election. Now, and again, I don't know if anybody's blaming him, but the argument of a strong economy and low unemployment rates could go out the window because, I mean, all the, forget about the Dow, all the gains from the Dow since he was first took office, that's all gone.
Right.
I suspect that's temporary. And I'm not somebody who cares about the Dow as much as I care about people having jobs. And those numbers are getting alarming. And we'll see if that becomes a political issue.
Courtney and Gahanna, you're on the air. Hi, Courtney.
Hey, good morning. So a few things. First, I missed your reporter roundtable, but I know why you can't do it. So nothing against you, Ken Rudin. We love you, too.
Well, we still did the reporter roundtable on Monday, but we didn't repeat it at night. So you can go online and hear everything. We're not necessarily, because things get so dated so quickly, we're not able to repeat them at night. And also some of the shows are truncated by press conferences and stuff like that we're covering live. So just so you know, you can go online and hear things that you won't hear.
That's good to know. Second, I just so appreciate how you guys have stepped up your coverage, how you're on every hour. I love all the morning guy this morning was like, we're going to get through this together. The news is about to be bad, but just hang in there. That was so wonderful.
Yeah.
But now my question, I think that this has really shown a difference between our healthcare system and more nationalized healthcare systems like in Italy, France, England, and even China. And I just wondered if you guys could speak to the different candidates' position on that and how this might have looked different if we had a national healthcare system as opposed to what we have now.
Okay, Courtney, thank you. I mean, yeah, they do have to make a policy to cover even the testing for this, which would automatically be covered in some other countries where there's a centralized system of healthcare. Ken Rudin?
Right, and that's true. And part of the president's proposal, part of his $1.2 trillion proposal does include free testing. If you listened to Sunday's debate between Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, and I like the fact that there was no studio audience.
Yeah,
no,
that was weird.
You know, playing to the crowd. Mm-hmm. But having said that, Bernie Sanders did make the argument, and of course, most of the debate was about the coronavirus. But Bernie Sanders said, if we had Medicare for all, if we had these kind of healthcare changes that I've been calling for decades, perhaps this would have been much different. But then Joe Biden would make the case that, well, there are other countries that do have a free, more lenient, more free healthcare policies that is also the countries that are suffering as well. So ultimately, I don't know if it played an issue, if it made a difference at all. I suspect that if it was going to play a difference, we would have seen it in the votes saying, well, Bernie Sanders is calling for Medicare for all, you know, free this and free that. And that wasn't the case. So I don't know how to compare it to other countries. I mean, this pandemic is something we've never seen before, but the way it's playing politically, I don't know if that Bernie Sanders argument wins at a time like this. I'm not sure.
Carol in Plain City, you're on the air. Hi, Carol.
Hi, I wanted to call and say that I'm pretty upset about not being able to vote, though I had the feeling it was all a done deal, but I'm hoping to be moving. I'm supposed to be leaving early April, and the state I'm moving to, Arizona, voted, so I can't vote there. And I did call Union County Board of Elections, and they're going to send me an application for an absentee ballot.
Right.
But I have to send it back, and then they will tell me whether they're going to even accept them. So I have a feeling I'm going to be totally shut out. And I'm a little upset. I mean, I could have done it. I could have gone. But I said, oh, I'm going to be here. I'll vote for the last time in Ohio. And it's just there are people that have circumstances that just are not you know, everybody's different. So I have a feeling we're both going to be shut out this time. So I just want people to know that. And the other simple thing was, because this is nothing to do with voting, but because I'm moving, I didn't have any stocks of anything, like toilet paper. So they tell you to stay at home, right? But you got no toilet paper, so you're out at the store four times a day trying to find it. So that's, tell me how safe that is. That hoarding is just, may their toilets all plug up.
The hoarders. I mean, some people hoard, there's all kinds of, you know, there's all kinds of different reasons. And it's, you know, one thing we're trying to not do is jump to conclusions about why people are buying large amounts, because, you know, Amazon really cracked down on those guys in Tennessee for trying to gouge. I don't know. I mean, Carol, there's probably others like Carol, right, Ken, who are going to be sort of caught in the middle of all of this.
Well, I don't want to talk about Carol's the toilet paper problem, but yeah. What I do want to talk about is that she is moving to a state, one Arizona, that has one of the most critical Senate races in the country. And yes, it's true, they've already voted for president, but their Senate and congressional primaries aren't until August 4th. So she has absolutely time to vote. It's a key race. It's the race where Martha McSally is the Republican, and it's probably going to be the astronaut Mark Kelly, the husband of Gabby Giffords, who's probably going to be the Democratic nominee. That is a key Senate race. If you're moving to Arizona, and I always say if you move to Arizona, you must have a sense of humor. But anyway, oh, sorry, I'm just having these periodic
Tucson, yeah,
flashbacks.
Okay.
Yeah. But anyway, there's still a vote. There's still a primary August 4th. And if you care about politics, love politics, Arizona is a key state for November.
Okay, Carol, there's something to look forward to. Where am I looking now? John in Pataskala. Hi, John, you're on the air.
Yeah, if you look at what the Republicans are doing, they have a pretty secure base of, you know, people who are anti-abortion, gun rights, the very wealthy, you know, because immediately as soon as they come in, they're going to give billions of dollars, trillions of dollars to businesses. So they pretty much have secured their base, and those people aren't going to change their votes. Now, the Democrats on the other side haven't figured out, do they want to go for the middle, more people in the middle that are leaning kind of right or left, or do they want to go for the more progressives or the left side of the party, which I've seen, if that's working for the Republicans, why isn't that going to work for the Democrats? It just makes all the sense in the world for me for Biden to select Elizabeth Warren, because then you get both a female sort of lean, plus you get a progressive lean, as opposed to getting something more centrist. And that's just a loser in my mind, because they're not going to get their base. And I wanted to hear Ken's opinion on those options.
Okay. Ken Rudin.
I think John's analysis is pretty much spot on. I think, one, that the Republican base is solid for Trump. That's not going to change.
Right.
There is nothing I've seen in the primaries or in any of the polls that indicate that Republican voters are drifting away from the president. And you're absolutely right. This is the dilemma that Joe Biden faces. Do you reach out to centrist voters and disaffected Republicans, in Pennsylvania, in Wisconsin, in Michigan, those key states, or do you embrace the fervent backing of the Bernie Sanders supporters, I saw a Newsweek poll this month that said 53%, only 53% of Bernie Sanders supporters say they'll vote for the Democratic nominee. Now, that is frightening if you want to defeat President Trump in November. So that is the dilemma the Democrats have, look, obviously you want to satisfy Bernie Sanders and his supporters. They made many concessions to him this round. For example, the superdelegates are not allowed to vote. Everybody was complaining about the superdelegates in 2016 and how they had the fingers on the scales for Hillary Clinton. Well, those superdelegates are not voting this year. They can only vote on a second ballot at the convention, which is not going to happen. So do you want to make concessions to Bernie Sanders? And if you do that, do you alienate centrist and moderate Republicans? That is the dilemma the Democrats have right now. It's still early. We still have 8 months to go, but the Democrats are not united in the way the Republicans are.
Okay. John, thanks for that call. Kevin in Kent, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin.
Yes, Ann. The it's strange about the Republicans and Trump uniting behind socialism, handing out $1,000 checks when it's politically expedient, I guess. I don't know. I know there's a crisis, and seemingly these moves to close everything down naturally would have an effect on the economy. It just depends on how long it lasts, right?
Mm.
I think that Kevin makes a good point. I mean, what about the balanced budget? Republicans have been calling for a balanced budget forever, and yet the tax cuts that the Republicans have instituted have blown up the deficit to record numbers. So, there's a philosophy, and it's one thing to be fiscally frugal when Barack Obama or Bill Clinton is in the White House, but when George W. Bush was in the White House, the deficit exploded, and it's even more so with Donald Trump. So
yeah.
you could have certain philosophy and certain positions, but sometimes that gets thrown out the window when you're in power.
Kevin, thanks for that call. I'm turning now to Tom in Columbus. Hi, Tom. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I heard a rumor the other day that Trump is going to dump Pence for a female VP in August, and he's saying it's 100%. The former UN ambassador, I can't think of what her name was.
Oh, Nikki Haley, yeah.
Yes. Have you heard about that?
Yes, and it's absolutely not going to happen. And I'm not making fun of you, but we go through this every 4 years. Always, Nixon is going to dump Agnew. Well, of course, Agnew dumped himself. Bush is going to dump Quayle. I remember, who was it? It was Bob Woodward who told me he was convinced that Clinton was going to dump, I'm sorry, that Obama was going to dump Joe Biden in 2012 and pick Hillary Clinton as his running mate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were so many things like that going on. You hear it every 4 years. Look, Mike Pence, whatever you think of Mike Pence, he helped get Donald Trump elected. He brought in evangelicals where Trump had no say among the evangelicals. I don't think any VP, I don't think this vice president is going to be dumped, but that rumor is out there, yes.
Yeah. Okay, Tom, thanks for that. And let's see, here's another VP question from Arlene and Lorraine. Hi, Arlene.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I was wondering, what do you think would be the outcome if Biden or Bernie picked Michelle Obama as vice president? I gather President Obama cannot run as vice president. Is
that
true?
Correct.
Right.
That's correct.
But do you think that Michelle Obama's irrational enough to do that?
Irrational.
Well, it's a tough road to hoe.
I think the real question is, would Michelle Obama pick Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders as her running mate? She is probably the most popular Democrat in the country. She has expressed over and over again absolutely no desire to serve in public office. And look, you always talk about the importance of a vice president, and we always say, well, wasn't Geraldine Ferraro incredible? And when Walter Mondale picked her, it was an amazing pick. And Mondale and Ferraro lost 49 states that year to Ronald Reagan. So the importance of a VP is often overrated. But having said that, Joe Biden is going to be 78 years old when he's the nominee of the party.
Mm-hmm.
That is something to consider when you're picking a running mate. So you have to pick somebody who could very well be the next president of the United States. God forbid something terrible happens.
Hmm. Thanks, Arlene, for that call. We appreciate it. In the closing minutes, I mean, how much does it matter anyway? What do we know about whoever is chosen for a running mate? What do we know about how much that really matters in the long run?
Well, that's what I said. I mean, ultimately, look, everybody made fun of Dan Quayle, that debate with Lloyd Benson.
Mm-hmm.
You're no Jack Kennedy. And everybody laughed at Dan Quayle. And yet the Bush-Quayle ticket won 40 out of 50 states in 1988.
Right.
So it doesn't always matter. But again, just as Lyndon Johnson helped John Kennedy in 1960, I think the VP pick on the Democratic side could very well be significant this year, given Joe Biden's age. I hate to sound like an ageist, but it's just a fact of life.
Ken Rudin, looking forward to talking to you again. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you. And your call is called in with some great questions.
They always
and I really
do.
Appreciate I appreciate them more than you know. Thank you.
Thank you. Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks so much for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.